Welcome to Yacht Femme, where we talk about the women that make the yachting industry. I'm your host, Andrea Tagliaferro. Learn who they are, how they got into yachting, and what they do today.
Hi everyone, welcome again to Yacht Femme. I'm here with Laura Sherrod. She is Director of Yacht Insurance at New Coast. Can you introduce yourself and tell us who you are, where are you from, and what are you doing yachting?
Oh, thank you for having me, Andrea. I listened to some of your podcasts and just really impressed with you and the idea of bringing women together and just understanding the yachting industry. It's never been just about, you know, a male dominated or, you know, operation or female dominated. It's just, there's so many things that are really wonderful about yachting. So I've had the pleasure of being a part of a family that's been in yachting for a long time. 1867 was when Merrill Stevens started. And I know I wasn't there, but we, I did grow up in Coconut Grove. They had a shipyard in Miami, in Coconut Grove, and also on the Miami River that's still there. Not owned by anybody in my family, but it's just been a great familial thing as far as watching the whole world of yachting grow up. So I have wonderful history on my mother's side. She was a yacht, in the yachting world, and my father's side, he was actually in insurance, and so the kind of that his father was an insurance agent. So I got it on both sides, you know. So we have yacht brokers and yacht repair people in my family. And then we have the insurance people. So that's how I got into yacht insurance, was because my father had an agency and I started work for him, basically washing coffee cups and, you know, doing filing and things when I was a kid and just loved the whole business of yachting. So I guess you'd say I've never done anything else, but it's pretty natural.
It's a different world out there, Laura. It's a different world, I'll tell you. Well, before we move further into your profession, you were saying that you had opened a new office in Antibes, and you have one in Florida. You are based in Florida.
I'm in Fort Lauderdale at Lauderdale Marine Center. But we also have an office in Antibes and in Clearwater and in Birmingham, Alabama, the yachting capital of the world, and in San Diego. So we have a vast, you know, we're trying to hit the yachting centers as far as our team. There's a lot of expertise in the yacht side and also in the boat side. They're, you know, that's more of a service operation as far as helping people find solutions for boats. It's pretty quick and easy. Yachting being a little more specific and technical and perhaps legal. So we try and help our clients find best solutions.
Okay, that's great for them. You were saying that you got into yachting, you started filing with your dad, but how did that become director of insurance? And why insurance? You said you were yachting from both sides of your family. So how was it that you went from there? What made you pick even insurance? I'm sure you were exposed to many facets of the industry.
Yeah, I think my first job was working as a crew on a yacht, the owner of the Coconut Grove Hotel owned three different boats, and I got a great tan working for him, but wasn't really I would say my family had something to do with that. They're like, we don't want you to be a boat bum. We want you to, you know, get an education. And so I did. And went to the University of Florida and FIU and I worked at Lloyd's as a broker. So I got a lot of good experience and decided that insurance was perhaps a little more lucrative than working as a deckhand. So I ended up
Definitely for the long run, but if you're a teenager sailing the world on a boat as a deckhand, it does seem very lucrative for sure.
Absolutely, and a lot of friends I have said, you know, you're not doing anything here. You've got boating experience. Why don't you sign on and become a crew? And they love it. They love it. But yeah, we've seen it from and so many of the friends that I have in Fort Lauderdale are former, you know, captains or chefs or whomever, and they're just like, okay, I'm not going to sea anymore. I'm back, you know. So that's all in our community, and literally half the people in my neighborhood are former boat people who are now working. It's still in the yachting industry, but in a different facet.
Correct. When I moved to Fort Lauderdale, I didn't know about the yachting industry, which I know it's shocking because it's everywhere. Then it was like someone took the veil off and they said, oh, that is the yachting industry. This is what it looks like. Then everywhere I looked, I felt surrounded. It was like everybody was either a crew or a broker. I was like, oh, all of these people are in the yachting industry. Wow. Okay, yeah. Got it. That's so true. Especially in Fort Lauderdale, you do have people that were crew and now become land-based. That's when you say the other facets.
Very true. Very true. Don't go to Waxies. No.
I used to live there for the rugby games. It was a blast. So can you describe your role? What does it mean to be a director of insurance?
Okay, so we started with New Coast when Marine Max decided to get into the insurance business, and that was just 2 years ago. So I've been working as a running programs for yachts and boats for a little over 30 years, and so Marine Max getting into the business, all of a sudden we realized they're the largest boat sales organization in the world. They own Fraser and Northrop and they sell 800 boats a month, you know. So there's a huge opportunity as far as developing the insurance program. So we've been working with them, and building an insurance agency from scratch is a really difficult thing to do. There's a lot of technical aspects of it. You have to have relationships with the carriers. And then you have to build your clientele. So it's been a challenging first couple of years, but I think we're getting to the point where we're really, really, everyone's enthusiastic. You know, I don't know if you noticed, but Marine Max also purchased IGY this month. And so we're very excited about that relationship as well. So we don't just do Marine Max business, but yeah, they're our big dog.
So were you the first insurance office in their portfolio?
Yes. Yes. So and it was a team of two when we were acquired. And now we have 29. And that's in 2 years. So we're hiring great people, and we're doing it the right way. But to say that it's been a challenge is not wrong.
I'm sure we all feel growing pains in a company are hard. Things change really rapidly when it comes to processes and everything else in the structure of how you conduct your business. We're seeing that in the moment. So I can really.
Yes. And hiring good people. I mean, it's all about the people. It's all about the people. So, you know, we want to make sure that we're not just hiring for the sake of putting a body in the chair, because it's a relationship. And, you know, you were asking me before about people that I've worked with in the industry, and the young people that I have brought along, that takes years for them to develop their skills, and then they get to go out and do the same thing that I'm doing now. So I love that. I just think that's part of the industry that I cherish, is, you know, helping people come along in their business and flourish.
Would you say that was your biggest accomplishment or your proudest moment or experience in the industry?
I would say yes. When somebody comes up to me and says, you know, thank you. I didn't know how much I didn't know until I started working with you, and you brought me along and you taught me. And then I've had that happen just a handful of times, and it's so heartwarming. And, you know, they're off doing something else, or they may still be working with me, but it's just really, that's what the business is about. It's a small world, and we get to do fun things with people and grow them in their business. So, and it took me 2 years to figure out that I thought I knew everything in yachting after 2 years. And after 5 years, I realized I didn't know anything. So it takes a long time to learn this business. And, you know, you have to appreciate where you get your information from and who's helpful. And, you know, the whole mentoring, counseling, communicating. I love some of the organizations that have come along. YPY, for example. I'm a member of the Fort Lauderdale Mariners Club, Marine Industries Association, all of that networking that goes along with just being able to, and Andrew, you probably have this with IT as well, because you guys have such a tight network of people who you can talk to about things. But I rely on my friends to help me as they do for me. So for example, we just had a really big insurance event happen on the other side of Florida, which was Hurricane Ian. And Ian causes all kinds of problems for a lot of people. And I pray for those people that are over there. But on the insurance side, we have to develop a plan of action right away. And so I had salvors calling me, hey, can you hook me up with some piece of property where we can put these boats while they're being evaluated as to whether or not they're going to be a claim or what they're going to turn into. That, all that network and all that relationship has to come together. And there's a lot of communication that goes in that, along with the fact that you're trying to service your clients. And we have to put together a plan. And with a hurricane of that magnitude, you have devastation. So you're trying to figure out, okay, how can we serve our clients best? You know, first figure out where they are, how their property has weathered the storm.
Can you take us actually through the steps of what that looks like, especially because it was so recent, or in your case, it's still ongoing. You see hurricane coming to Florida. What are your steps? Like, I'm sure there's like some kind of process that you're saying that's preventative, because there's some things that you've seen time and time and again that you can't avoid. They will be coming down the pipeline. So what does that look like for you?
So just using Ian as a perfect example, it was supposed to go to Tampa. And immediately, just days before, it took a slight turn, and then another slight turn, and ended up hitting Fort Myers and Sanibel Island right on the nose. And what that, and, you know, and the reason why we're having such catastrophic casualties is because it's very flat over there. They had a lot of surge, and so that kind of forethought as far as planning for something like that, I mean, the whole coast of Florida was in preparation mode. So you have a hurricane plan that you start doing maybe 2 weeks out when you see it down in the Caribbean. And the insurers, they're very good at catastrophes, but it depends. You have to make determinations on where it lands and what's available. So I-75 was closed for a while. So there, how do you get your team to the area that they need to be at? Sanibel Island is cut off. It doesn't have a road anymore. So how do you get to Sanibel Island? You get there by helicopter. Well, yacht insurers aren't the highest priority. The priority is taking care of the people. So it may be weeks until we know everything that's happening on the yacht side, but the property and the safety of life is the priority right now. So to answer your question, it changes every time. My first hurricane was Hurricane Hugo in 1989. That was I've done everything, but I was handling claims at the time, and it hit St. Thomas, and it also came in as a Cat 5 storm to South Carolina. So the same storm hit two different locations, and I happened to have a client who had a boat in St. Thomas and in South Carolina, and he lost both boats. Poor guy, I know. So hurricanes are unpredictable, and when they happen, you just kind of try and determine what you're going to do about it and solve the problems one at a time. Luckily, I deal with a business that we don't get, 900,000 claims. We're not homeowners carriers or auto carriers or things like that. All we do is yachts. So typically we're very hands-on when it comes to the service of our clients when they have an event, and, try and help them, try and get the best surveyors involved, try and get the boat salvaged and out of the area as quick as they can, get the repairs done. If it's not going to be repairable, then get it sold and get the owner paid quick. That's our goal. So that's what an insurance agent is for, is that time.
I was gonna say, anyone skimping out of insurance if they live in Florida, I doubt it.
Well, I believe there were a lot of uninsured boats on the West Coast this time. But they had a false sense of security because there's not been a storm that big that's come in for many, many years. So,
and anyone listening, yeah, please get your insurance, especially when you live anywhere in Florida. It will happen at some point, unless you buy your boat and sell it really quickly. Oh, let's dive into what have you seen change in the yachting industry in your fast career?
So my grandfather ran Merrill Stevens. He grew up at the shipyard. He was a Merrill. And I'd say, I have a picture that he used to have on his mantle of these tall ships. And I'll just show it to, I don't know if you can see this, but that was the front waterfront in Miami, and it's a picture of all these tall ships, Miami Bayfront in 1924. So you realize that our history of yachting is so small, is so insignificant in the whole scheme of time, that it's just amazing to me. And it used to be, and that's how the agency my dad was part of started, was C.A. Hansen was involved with the very, very wealthy, the Vanderbilts and the Mellons and the Carnegies and the those kinds of level of wealth were the only owners of yachts, or because there weren't that many yachts in the world. And so what I've seen, an 80-foot boat used to be a really big boat when I started. And now doesn't even make the list, So,
I know, I thought that was crazy. 80-foot boat. Yes. That was a big one.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I remember when we insured all the yachts that came out of Berger Boat Company, and Berger was one of the most, the best and premier yacht builders in the United States. And the biggest Berger ever built was 124 feet. So they didn't build anything bigger than that. So we've seen the growth, and I wonder where it's going to go. I like to go to Monaco and see these monsters, and read about what's happening in all of these amazing, wonderful shipyards around the world. But I just don't know who's going to man them. Where do you find crew that has the experience? My gosh. Yeah.
I don't remember what boat I was visiting in. It was in the Fort Lauderdale show. And we went downstairs to the crew area. The crew area was like in a cruise. It was so huge. You never thought that there was anything but the crew area when you were, it was just so ample. It was so spacious. It wasn't like compact, like that you're used to just little tunnels at all. It was a lounge area on one side. There was a huge open kitchen on the other side. And then all the dormitories, like the cabins. And that's what I thought. I was like, damn, all these qualified people just to run this boat. Yeah, you see that a lot. There's a lot of posts now for, well, there's always been, but they need a lot of crew at the moment. When the boats were docked during the pandemic, a lot of people that were like crew ended up, you know, moving away from the industry to do other stuff. Same happened with a lot of industries and then came back. So you continue to see so many job posts to bring back qualified crew to run these amazing boats.
Yeah, and the owners, one of the things that changed during the pandemic was that the owners became novice. I mean, we had all these first timers come into the market, which is great, but they don't understand that you can't just hire a crew person because they are your best friend or they're, you know, they're tall and adorable, you know? And so we had a lot of pushback, you know, with some of those owners. They go, well, I want to do so-and-so. Well, I'm sorry, but go find yourself another insurer, please, because I don't think you're ready for that. You know, well, I can drive an airplane. I'm a licensed pilot. And I said, well, sir, that's great. Awesome. But
you can fly to the airport where your yacht will be done. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. So yeah, that was, I guess, my biggest thing during COVID was that we just had such an influx of people coming into the marketplace that trying to find solutions for their insurance was, wow, really challenging. So sometimes that's, you know, interesting. Well,
I didn't think that you took in into consideration who owned the boat and who was the crew. Is that something that comes into play?
Very much, because you can say you can have a bad build and a good owner and have no claim. You can have a good build and bad owner and run it up on the rocks, you know? So it's all about the quality of the owner and the crew making good decisions. So to use an example, in the boating business, there are carriers that don't even ask you if you've ever run a boat before. They don't ask you anything. They ask you, what is your, they run a credit score and they ask you if you're married. And I'm like, okay, that works for them. But that's because they see if you've got a good credit score, you take care of things. And if you're married, you probably take care of things. You know, you're a responsible person, and that's how they judge whether or not you're a good risk. Now on yachting, obviously, we rely a lot on yacht managers. So those first timers, we were able to find it homes for, basically because we demand that somebody like that would have true full yacht management involved.
Okay, because I was actually thinking about that. If, for example, I have this great captain, I'm a new owner, great build, but what if that captain, after I get my insurance, leaves me in a month? You get your assurance or your risk evaluated because you have that yacht manager that you trust that will fill that captain leaving with someone that's equally qualified, I'm guessing. Like,
very much. And so we have a constant communication and with the yachts, with the owners, with the captains, with the changes that go on with, you know, I've decided I want to go to Alaska, but you're in, you know, Caribbean or something. Okay, well, there's a plan. You have to, we have shipyard periods have been a huge thing because fires that have happened in shipyards. So a whole lot of communication has to happen on a regular basis with either the manager or the crew. And I'm not saying that captains can't run a boat. Or, you know, completely manage a boat. But when you're looking at a boat over 300 gross tons, you certainly want to have the captain involved, captain working with yacht management.
Can you tell us something we don't know about you? And I say it is like, what can I not find in you of you on LinkedIn?
Okay. Well, so I think that I have very long arms. No. not on LinkedIn. I would say probably that I absolutely adore my job. I love what I do. I love the history of yachting, and I love just everything that we are able to be a part of.
Come on, share a hobby, Laura. Give me something. If I am networking and I want to connect with you, you know, at Flips, I need to be able to have something to say to you.
You're not gonna, the whole, you know, what, how long are your arms?
that you will see me next to you, like measuring my shoulder to your hand to see which one's longer, but something that won't be as awkward, maybe.
I'd say something that people don't know about me is that no, I got it. All right, so ask me again. All right,
Laura, now give us something interesting, something we can dish on. What can you tell me about yourself that I will not be able to find of you on LinkedIn? Like, give me something to connect with.
All right. So I played golf in college for FIU women's golf team as a walk-on. I was the worst player on the team, but I played anyway. And so I played college golf at FIU, and I still try and get out there and whack it around on occasion. But I was a college athlete, college golfer.
That's so cool. Do you use golf? Like, I know in so many other industries, golf is such a great tool to connect and even talk about business. Does that happen in yachting or not?
Yeah. So a couple of yacht brokers have created their different tournaments, the Captain's Golf. And so I'll go out there and try and play some golf. 3 or 4 times a year, and it's a good captains love to play golf, by the way.
So, really?
Oh yeah. So they're always trying to get a game out of, you know, while they've got some downtime. So yeah, we get some use out of being a former golfer.
Okay. Sad for me. I cannot hit that ball. I will be providing the drinks or your designated driver. and my favorite question of the show, what advice would you give yourself if it was the first day you're starting yachting, or you want to give to anyone else that's new to the yachting industry?
So you've heard my story now. You know, I have a lot of experience in history, and I'd have to say that I started off being pretty darn shy. And you can tell I'm probably not that anymore. What I would say is, don't be shy. Don't be timid about the knowledge that you have, because you probably have a lot more knowledge than anybody else in the room. You just may not have the guts to say it. And just be yourself. So
Love that. I'm actually very shy.
Really?
It took me a long while. I would go to the YP my meetings. I knew pretty much everyone casually, but when we were in the YPY networking, atmosphere, I would literally like look at someone like I was hunting and be like, okay, I'm talking to you. And I would, count down from like, okay, in 5 seconds I'll talk to them, in four and three. Like I needed to amp myself up and even rehearse, like, hi, I'm Andrea, this is what I do. I was so terrified. And then after that little introduction, I would be like sweating.
I can relate. I totally relate to
But network is such a huge part of any industry, and yachting, it's all about relationships. We are disconnected so much time because if you have to talk to crew, they are on the boat. Then when they get off, they have 1 2 days to connect with you. So
Yeah.
you may lose your moment to say hi, introduce yourself, and make that connection that can last you years. So yeah, don't be timid. I love that. Thanks.
Good. Yeah.
Laura, before I leave you so you can have a great weekend, is anything else you want to share with us today?
Do I have time to tell a claim story? That's kind of
Yes.
fun. Oh, okay.
Let it
Okay.
rip.
All right. So have you seen the movie The Wolf of Wall Street?
Yes, of course.
Okay. You remember the boat that they show in
It
that?
died. The owner was telling the captain to keep going. It was okay, and then it was catastrophe.
Well, so that was a real claim. That was a yacht named Nadine, but it didn't start off as Nadine. And this is a great story because it shows how connected yachting is to everybody in that is still in this business. So it started off as a boat named Coco, and it was owned by Coco Chanel.
Oh.
And it was built for her. And so it was sold to a guy named Mel Powers. Mel Powers, and had oil money. He was from Texas. And so he bought it and he decided it wasn't big enough. And he took it to Merrill Stevens Shipyard. And Merrill Stevens designed and put in a 20-foot extension in the center of the boat, cut the boat in half, added 20 feet to the middle, put it back together beautifully. And then Mel ran out of money. So now the boat is owned partially by Merrill Stevens and partially by the bank from Texas. And my mother, they needed to get it finished. And my mother is an interior designer and she's like, I'll help. And she comes on board the boat and she goes, oh, this was Coco Chanel's boat. And I mean, literally, it had the seams in the furniture and things. And she's like, we just need to keep doing what she was doing because this is gorgeous, you know? And so she's like trying to make it all fit together and look right and everything as far as the original design of Coco Chanel, right? So along comes the bankers, and I'm not kidding, they have white tassels on their boots and wearing the cowboy hats, and they come on board and they go, ah, we got change. We need some mirrors and we need some shag carpeting. And I mean, my mom was like, so anyway, they finished the boat and it's bought by a guy named Bernie Little. Bernie Little was Bush, Anheuser-Busch. He had race boats and he had Big Eagle and he named the boat Big Eagle. And because he had a number of boats named Big Eagle. So he buys it and he's chartering it. Mark Elliott was the captain. And they're chartering. And the one of the charterers was the Wolf of Wall Street. And so he really enjoyed chartering the boat. And he ended up, and we did all the insurance for Mr. Little. And he ended up selling it to Jordan Belfort. Jordan Belfort used it in
Who is
his,
the Wolf of Wall Street? Jordan Belfort?
yes,
Okay, so he
yes.
chartered and then bought.
He chartered for a long time and then he bought the boat. And that's the end of the story, is poor Nadine going down off of the coast of Italy. And I got the phone call from Mrs. Belfort when they had been rescued by the Italian Navy.
So for those that haven't seen the movie, what happens to the boat? What is this iconic scene in the movie?
Yeah, so in reality, I believe what occurred was the boat was long and narrow, and they couldn't turn around. They got into some seas that they really didn't want to be in, but they couldn't turn around because they were going to breach. And so they kept going, and the seas got worse. It was a mistral, and the tender broke loose. And when the tender broke loose, it came through, because the tender was on the foredeck. Tender came through the windows of the salon, and so they were taking on water, a lot of water, through those broken windows. And so that was kind of the death knell. So the boat sank and off the coast of Italy, and everyone was rescued by the Italian government with helicopters. They actually had to push the helicopter off of the yacht so that they could rescue people, because they couldn't fly the helicopter off. So yeah, that was our claim. We paid that one.
Well, thank God it was insured, huh?
yeah. Glad it was insured. Yes.
Oh, well, thank you for sharing. That must have been like one fun call. I can imagine being like Tuesday waxies, whatever, and you get one of these catastrophe calls. You're like, okay, this just happened way on the other side of the world. Let's go deal with it.
That does occasionally occur.
Well then, well, thank you so much for that story and for sharing everything else you did with us today in the episode. Where can people follow along? Follow you, yeah.
Oh, well, LinkedIn, and you know, our website is newcoast.com. So I'd love to hear from anybody.
Sounds great. Yeah, follow her on LinkedIn. You'll see some fun stuff, and as you heard, if this episode ends before flips, you'll see a lot of flips information. So
that's true.
Laura, thanks again, and have a great weekend, and have a great time preparing for flips next week.
Thank you, Andrea. We'll see you there.
Thank you so much for listening to The Yacht Femme. If you like what you heard, please like, subscribe, and comment. Your comment will help us reach a broader audience. And don't miss the next episode. Bye!